proposed class that we are discussing is 6, computer programs protected by dongles that prevent access due to malfunction or damage or hardware or software incompatibilities or require obsolete systems or obsolete hardware as a condition of access. And since you're the proponent, Mr. Montoro, you go first.
Thank you, Ms. Peters. Good morning. Good morning, panel.
Yeah.
Ms. Carson, I just want to mention that everything was submitted this year. I would have submitted it last year if I could have. But please believe me, everything was on time this year.
I understand. David actually turns red every time we talk about this.
I was embarrassed once, and I won't do it. It won't happen again. Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joseph E. Montoro, Jr., and I've come before you today to ask you at the very least renew the existing exemption on dongles, and this year to take it a little further and look at obsolete hardware and systems. This is my fourth time here before you since the DMCA was passed. The last time, my daughter joined me. Now she just turned 16 and got her driver's license, so she doesn't hang around Dad too much anymore. I've had many customers come to me thinking that they could never get their dongled software to work again and had given up hope, and hope is an important thing to have. From about 2004 through 2007, I had degenerative disc disease in my lower back at 3 levels. There were too many nights I had to simply take my narcotics and pray I fell asleep to ease the pain. I tried a number of pain management treatments and was told I would be a pain management patient for life. But that wasn't good enough for me, so I did what a lot of my customers do. I kept looking for a solution. I found one, and after much research, learned that our health system would not cover a new artificial disc procedure. But in Europe, they have been doing this for years. I found a clinic in Munich, Germany, where I had the 3 bad discs replaced. I grew 1.25 inches taller from the operation, and am now playing tennis again. Hope is a wonderful thing to have. When we use computers and software, we have a reasonable expectation that they will continue to be healthy. Maybe need a fix here and there, but still work. We all depend on the hardware our computers use and the software that does the job we need. There is no greater fear than turning on that computer and seeing a virus or opening up that program which may be connected to a dongle and it not work. This is true whether you work for NOAA and depend on the software to enter mission-critical fisheries data, or Westinghouse, and use your software for stress-testing nuclear structures, both of which are clients of mine. This division of Westinghouse uses what is called a legacy system. A legacy system is an old computer system using an old computer hardware, operating system, and software. By removing this somewhat working dongle, they are hoping I can help them upgrade to a newer, better, more reliable system. In this case, a 350 megahertz processor, 64 megabytes of RAM, and an ISA computer running DOS 6.22. For comparison, now we are running quad-core systems at 3.5 gigahertz per core, 6 gigabytes of RAM, PCIe slots, and Windows 7 is due out shortly. So as some have suggested, why not simply upgrade this package? Because the software program is part of a system and is interdependent with other programs that do the work. The system cannot be taken out of service, and the cost of designing new systems is quite high. Retraining on a completely new system would be costly and lost time and money for not much benefit. I've included a 26-page illustrated quick start guide by Zukov. It shows the software structure and relations for the structure testing process. And even if there are no engineers in the room, I think by looking at the last page, we all get it. It's not easy to set up and run. And I submitted that the other day, or a couple days ago, actually, of course. And this is the last page that I wanted to refer you to. The rest of the structures are quite, I'm sorry, Mr. Carson. It's this document here. And this was emailed. The last page.
Nick didn't open his email till last night, so we can't consider it. Sorry.
Thank you. the last page, gentlemen, is this poor guy who's gone through quite a bit of work here trying to put all this together, and has worked quite hard at doing what he had to do. However, the base system that this gentleman uses cannot be upgraded or can be upgraded to last longer. Let's be clear, the dongle is not damaged. It functions, but only on very old, obsolete hardware systems for which replacement parts are very difficult to find. The dongle prevents much newer hardware from being used because the dongle will no longer be recognized by the software. But by bypassing this access control device, a faster computer can be used, extending the useful life of the system. And this is actual harm we're showing on somebody who's actually purchased the software quite a bit of time ago. The same thing is true with NASA's Space Shuttle program, not far from my hometown, St. Augustine. It uses a large amount of 70s-era technology. Replacement cost is prohibitive because of the expensive requirements for flight certification. The legacy hardware currently being used has completed the expensive integration and certification requirement for flight. But any new equipment would have to go through that entire process again, requiring extensive tests of the new components and their new configurations before a single unit could be used in the Space Shuttle program. This would make any new system that started the certification process a de facto legacy system by the time of completion. Additionally, because the entire Space Shuttle system, including ground and launch vehicle assets, was designed to work together as a closed system, and the specifications have not changed, all of the certified systems and components still serve well in the roles in which they were designed. What I have in front of me are dongles that are connected to our printer port. That would be these devices. And I know we've all seen those before. A dongle is a technological measure. It is an access control device that attaches to either the printer port or the USB port of a computer and prevents a licensed end user from accessing a computer program that has been legally purchased, a non-infringing use. Unless the hardware access control device is attached and the required device driver installed and is supported by the operating system and all are functioning properly, the program will not run. One program would have one dongle, so if you have multiple programs, you would, of course, need multiple dongles. This is not uncommon. Even though these dongles are only a few years old and the software runs fine, they can only be run on a computer with a printer port, and today most computers do not have one. So now we have the new and improved version USB dongles, and these stick out from multiple sides of a laptop and are waiting to be broken. And it looks like something like this. Now, in my written testimony before that I submitted in the initial comments, I also showed how one of the companies was SafeNet Technologies, who had problems with their own dongles, USB type, as far as being on the ports and breaking quite easily. They actually went through and ended up doing a comparison test to show that now they have a new improved version which doesn't break as easily. And that's nice, unless you're the person using that software that had the broken dongle to begin with and have had to wait and get a replacement and then have had downtime and not being able to use the software you paid for. I'd like to refer you to an article called The Problem with Dongles. And this is by John Gillespie Brown, and I've sent that one up also. That echoes the comments I have made before. John Gillespie Brown is a published author, lecturer, founder, CEO, and an expert on software licensing and piracy. He currently mentors at Stanford, UC Berkeley, and the London Business School. He says, one of the problems with dongles is that there are no standards for dongles, meaning that each dongle solution works differently, using different ASICs, which is a computer chip that goes in the little dongle itself to perform the calculations, and software drivers. He goes on to say, they create support headaches. Dongles can cause incompatibilities with hardware and software. A dongle that works perfectly well may suddenly experience problems following a major operating system upgrade or a driver patch. And this happened with Vista, Microsoft Vista Service Pack 1. They introduced a service pack for Vista, and the end result was that USB devices were not being recognized. Should a dongle suddenly begin locking up because of changes to its operating environment, the supplier will have to resolve the problem, often with considerable time delays waiting for new drivers. Again, these are the words of a well-known expert in software security that echo identical to the words that I've said to the Copyright Office here for a number of years. On Wednesday, April 1st, 2009, the Texas State Senate gave preliminary approval to a state budget that includes a provision forbidding government agencies from upgrading to Windows Vista without written permission. Senator Juan Hinojosa, the vice chairman of the Finance Committee, proposed a rider because of the many reports of problems with Vista. The problems with this particular operating system are known nationwide. And I think it's Apple who's made quite a good series of commercials on the poor gentleman from Microsoft who's done who does everything but actually improve the operating system. Companies continue to get bought and sold, and their products do become obsolete. I have testified over the years that a dongle exemption is needed because companies get bought and sold, and products are no longer supported. This can happen to even the giants of an industry. In March of this year, it was reported that IBM is looking to buy Sun Microsystems. Most of us are familiar with Sun through the Java programming language. But they also were very big in the server market, and that business was based on Sun's proprietary hardware designs, something that will be obsolete very shortly, especially when AMD and Intel can run much lower-cost processors using personal computer technology. On April 1st, 2009, a shocker, Silicon Graphics, the 12 years ago was nearly a $4 billion a year company, is being sold for $25 million to Rackable Systems. Now, SGI made some of the most incredible computer systems using their own chips and operating systems. If you ever saw the Jurassic Park movies, those special effects were done with all Silicon Graphics computers. Now all that is left is obsolete hardware and obsolete operating systems. But I saved the best for last. Over the years, two largest dongle manufacturers have been Rainbow Technologies and Aladdin Knowledge Systems. Rainbow was acquired by SafeNet a few years ago, and as I testified, more than half of their product line was discontinued. On March 27, 2009, a report stated that Aladdin will be acquired by SafeNet, leaving us with one large dongle company and a boatload of dongles that would be discontinued and no longer supported. In my initial comments, I noted that Aladdin was expected to earn between $123 and $130 million for the year of 2008. That which was up from the $105.9 million in 2007. Under this new Obama administration, perhaps we can give the average person a little more credit and realize they are not trying to rip off companies. Yet they do not want to be ripped off either. When an operating system or older hardware interferes with a user's right to use software that was lawfully obtained that uses a dongle, consumers deserve a choice in obtaining a replacement part, should they have a problem with it. If I buy a General Motors car and the alternator goes bad, even though General Motors makes that part, I don't have to buy that replacement part from General Motors because other companies are out there in the marketplace providing that replacement part. If 64-bit Microsoft Windows 7 does not have a device driver for a dongle, which is needed for the software that was legitimately obtained to run, shouldn't the consumer be allowed to find one from any source? I applaud the joint commenters. All of the reply comments have been positive for renewing the exemption, at least in its present form. This from what were once opponents. There has never been an iota presented that the dongle exemption, even dating back to the original one 9 years ago, has done any harm to the industry when I first proposed it. In 2006, this board defined obsolete as it related to video games and said, a format shall be considered obsolete if the machine or system necessary to render perceptible a work is no longer manufactured or reasonably available in the marketplace. And it was specifically relating to machines or systems. And I think we'll find the same thing in the next 3 years if the panel approves my proposed class of works. Computer programs protected by dongles that prevent access due to malfunction or damage, or hardware or software incompatibilities, or require obsolete systems or obsolete hardware as a condition of access. I thank you once again for the opportunity to be part of these proceedings and look forward to your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Metallitz?
Thank you. Good morning. I will say for the record again, I'm here on behalf of the nine copyright industry organizations joined together as joint creators and copyright owners. I'm not 1.5 inches taller than I was 3 years ago. In fact, I think I'm probably 1.5 inches shorter than I was last Friday after 3 days of hearings. But nonetheless, I'm happy to present the views of the joint commenters on proposed Exemption 6. Mr. Montoro is correct that we're not opposing the recognition of an exemption this time that would be the same as what you recognized last time. It's not renewal of the exemption, but it would be recognition of the same exemption. And that it really is, it depends on whether you think that he has met the burden of showing, of satisfying the criteria that you have been directed by Congress to apply. We do oppose any expansion of the existing exemption, and in particular the expansion that he has proposed. And this is primarily over the issue of alternatives to circumvention, not on the issue of non-infringing use or whether they're whether there is a non-infringing use and whether the prohibition is affecting it. I guess I would, one question that I wasn't really able to answer for myself when reviewing the submission was what activity is currently, what activity is not permitted under the current exemption that he would be seeking to engage in under the exemption that he proposes. It's possible that would shed some light on the proposal for an expansion. In some cases, for example, I'm not sure that what he's describing doesn't describe a malfunction of the dongle, a dongle that's not working. And if that's the case, perhaps, the dongle is obsolete in the sense that the office defined it in the 2006 exemption, perhaps there are perhaps it falls within the current exemption. But when, in looking at the submission, many examples that are given that I think would be I think Mr. Montoro is saying would be covered by his proposed exemption that are not covered by the existing exemption under the headings of software / operating system incompatibilities. My printout of this was not paginated, but it's on the fifth page of his submission. And then there's another section called dongle malfunction / hardware incompatibilities on page 8. Having looked at some of these, I'm not at all sure that they really describe a situation in which there is a malfunctioning dongle at all. And I certainly don't think that they describe a situation in which there are no alternatives to circumvention or no viable alternatives to circumvention in order to obtain access to the software. If you look at the example that's aligned with Exhibit 15 on page 6, Windows Vista, the dongle doesn't work with Windows Vista. Well, obviously you can use a different operating system. Exhibit 16, same thing. Exhibit 17, this seems to consist of a support document from Aladdin that explains ways to solve problems if your dongle is not working. I'm not sure if he's saying that none of these solutions work, but certainly the exhibit that's presented there shows that the manufacturer is supporting the dongle and is providing suggestions on how to get the dongle to work when it's not working. Exhibit 18, as it's described here, this is not a dongle problem. This is a software problem. The software is sending out a signal that's causing the machine that it's operating a milling machine to start moving erratically. That's a software problem. The dongle is not causing that problem. There's no indication that the dongle is malfunctioning in any way whatsoever. Exhibit 21, if you have multiple user profiles, then you may have problems, your dongle may not work right. Well, there's an obvious solution, don't use multiple user profiles. On Exhibit 22, I skipped Exhibit 20, which doesn't even mention dongles. It talks about USB devices, and I'm not familiar with this, but I've got to assume that if no USB device was working with Vista, that problem was fixed pronto by Microsoft. If I'm wrong, then I'm not sure how I'm operating the mouse on my laptop, but that's I think this problem went away. Exhibit 22, Microsoft, again, is telling you how you can fix this problem of incompatibilities between the dongle and an operating system, similarly with Exhibit 23. In the next section, Exhibit 26, it sounds like this is a malfunction of the virtual private network. It's dropping these calls and not, without ending the session. The company is offering to fix it for a price. It's not clear to me that this is a situation that would even be covered by his proposed exemption. On Exhibit 27, someone named Aaron approached Mr. Montoro looking for a replacement dongle. Obviously, they came to the wrong place, but there's no indication that they couldn't get a replacement dongle if they went to the right place. Exhibit 31, this isn't describing a malfunction of the dongle. This is describing the conditions under which the dongle will function correctly. And it's, you know, if you plug something into the wrong port, it's not going to work. And again, they're saying some other things that you have to make sure are not the case if you want your dongle to work. Again, I think these are all workarounds that don't require circumvention. So on the whole, I didn't see that the submission really demonstrated the need for expansion of the exemption, because it didn't demonstrate situations in which only circumvention of the access control was a viable means of gaining access to the software, which is what this is, you know, what this is all about. Now, I'm not sure in the discussion of reference to NASA whether Mr. Montoro is saying that the entire space launch system of NASA would have to be redesigned unless a dongle could be circumvented. If that were demonstrated, that I think would run up against what Ben Gallant asked about a couple of days ago, which was how do we decide to what degree could we say that if the user has to incur expense, but that if the user incurs some expense, it can access the material without circumventing. Is there an end point to that? And I suppose if you were to say that yes, NASA would have to redesign its entire space launch system, then that would be kind of hard to argue that that was an alternative to circumvention. But I don't think we really have proof of that, or it might be interesting to explore that further. Several other of the examples and in the testimony today involve delays in getting replacements, which are unfortunate, but clearly there is, if you can get the replacement dongle, then the exemption doesn't apply. So I'm not taken as a whole, I think it's very questionable that the evidence has been presented that would support any expansion of the exemption that you have before you. I've not seen the material that Mr. Montoro submitted a few days ago, and of course would be interested in seeing that, and we may have some reactions to that. But short of that, I would simply urge you not to, if you do decide that the burden has been met for recognizing an exemption in this area, that you not expand it beyond the boundaries that you recognized in 2006. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you want to respond to Mr. Metellus? And maybe specifically you could address his question about what activity is not permitted under the current exemption that would be covered by the expansion.
Yes, ma'am. I think one of the problems maybe is the definition of what we're talking about, and Metellus, I'm sorry.
Steve.
Thanks. May I? Thank you.
Yes, please.
I'll take it. Thank you. You know, I understand what Steve's saying, but for the most part, there are not the activity that's not covered under the present exemption. We've got the way the exemption was framed, and the way my submission in the last 3 years ago was not exactly timely in all the materials that were presented. I didn't really have an opportunity, I think, to do the justice to that argument, and I certainly apologize to the board for not being timely on that. But now, when you've got the activities, let me just think of how I want to say this. If we're talking about obsolete hardware and obsolete software and incompatible operating systems, I think that's where what I'm really talking about. Now, how do we define a malfunctioning dongle, or is it a problem with the operating system, Or is it a problem with the dongle? Is it a problem with the hardware? And I suppose we could go passing blame to, from one point to the other to the other. But I think really these whole, everything operates as a unit. And what I tried to make the point of in my testimony today was that all these systems are integrated. You can't simply have a dongle and run a program without an operating system. You can't run a program without a computer. So I don't know if we can actually separate and say that one, if one, you can have one thing but not the other. And if we have any one part, for example, my example with Windows 7.64 that coming out, and the problem we had with Vista, actually, which was almost identical in the beginning when Vista came out because it was completely rewritten software. But the drivers for some of these devices were not available. And now when we've got Aladdin being bought out by SafeNet, if the dongle functions under Windows XP, that's fine. Windows XP is being phased out, won't be supported anymore. Microsoft makes that very clear on their website. So the newest operating system is Vista. Now, Vista won't be phased out, so we have no other operating system, as Steve suggested, to go back to. He said, don't run it on Vista. Well, we really don't have any choices. That's what's sold on new computers. Microsoft doesn't sell DOS anymore. They don't sell Windows 3.1 anymore, and they don't sell XP anymore unless you actually downgrade through an original equipment manufacturer when you buy a new computer. And some of these devices don't actually take don't work under the faster machines. So to answer the question again, is it a question that the dongle malfunctions, or is it the operating system, or is it the hardware? And I really submit that it's all of these combined, because nothing works by itself.
I think what Mr. Montour is describing is interoperability problems, and again, I don't think that this is not new to this to this proceeding. This is maybe perhaps in a somewhat different context. I'm not sure there really is an expectation, which he had, I think he indicated at the beginning of his presentation, that every piece of software will work forever on any operating system that comes along, even if the operating system on which it originally was designed, for which it was originally designed, becomes obsolete. I'm just not sure that that's a problem that falls within the scope of this proceeding.
I think when we lease, may I? I think when you don't actually buy software, we lease software. So unless there's a specific time period that says in the software that you're buying or leasing, actually, that says this software will only work for a certain period of time, or this software is only good until the next operating system comes out, well, it doesn't do that. And so when you actually go out and buy that version of a product, you're really expecting that product to continue working and to be supported along the line for a period of time. It works in any of the industries. We really expect if we're buying something for CAD design or we're buying something to use through Westlaw, we expect whatever the access mechanism is to get into Westlaw will continue to work for us, whether it's an operating system of Vista or something else.
Rob.
I just have a couple of questions about some of the questions that Steve asked in regard to how would this proposed exemption be limited in terms of certain activities that are offered by copyright owners. For instance, if copyright owners are providing information about how to attempt to fix particular problems, or if they're providing, even if or in, well, let's start with one at a time.
All right.
If they're providing information about how to address problems, to what extent do individuals have to go by what the copyright owner is offering first? How do they have to establish that none of those fixes that have been suggested are working?
I think it's a matter of time. And as I mentioned, the letter from the, or the comments from Mr. Let's get back in here. From John Gillespie Brown. Microsoft admitted they had a problem with Windows Vista when they came out with the Service Pack 1. And I'm glad Steve didn't have a problem with his mouse, but if you were using a dongle device, you may well have had problems. It didn't happen to every system. So what happens is you may have I guess the reasonable question is, what's a reasonable time to wait for a problem to be resolved? And that's what Mr. Gillespie Brown talks about. Once the problem is discovered, it has to be submitted as a bug report. And if you've ever tried to get any information out of Microsoft or contact them if you've had a problem, it can take quite some time. Then other people have to report the issue. And once they've reported the issue, then Microsoft goes ahead and they do their testing, and then they do some more troubleshooting, and they have to come up with a patch. Now, the period of time, what's the reasonable period of time you have to wait to go without your software is really the question.
Well, maybe you could answer that question.
Well, and it depends on the industry. I suppose if I'm using my computer to surf the Internet, I don't think it's really a big problem. Unless I'm doing what I do. If you're using a computer that's really important for computer-aided design and manufacturing, and you could lose thousands of dollars if this device fails, then you can't afford to be down for one period of time. And I've shown examples in my testimony before that these are mission-critical devices. The fisheries, if that is not entered, it's a big problem.
And so this would vary on the nature of the use and the particular software on in terms of what kind of delay would be. How could that be sort of framed within the exemption in some way that in some cases where it's a certain kind of software that the amount of time that would be reasonable. I mean, is this just putting some kind of unless the copyright owner is reasonably responsive?
I don't expect the office to frame something that would for each individual person out there. I think we're going to have to simply say that after reasonable attempts have been made to contact the software copyright owner, if a problem has not been resolved, then a circumvention measure should be available to the end user.
Well, then what about going back to the question of sort of another level of this beyond delay, the question of cost. And we had some discussion of this, and I think we weren't quite clear exactly what the record had been in the past. Steve and I were talking about that a little, but to what extent, I believe that the testimony and the evidence had been in the past, and I see, at least in your submission this time as well, again, I don't have the page number, but I guess this is on the fourth page of the submission in the paragraph that starts, there are times.
Regarding ZMAX, yes.
That the program sells for $5,000 per user and for 10 people to use the software, but that if something goes wrong, then it looks like it will cost $7,000 to get the service contract. Is that right?
Yes, correct. From my experience, what I've seen is that companies will not simply, let's say you have a device, a dongle, that is having a problem. Well, the company is, unless you have a maintenance agreement with the company, with the software manufacturer, they won't help you. So you actually have to go out and have a service contract. Now, for this company in particular, ZMAX, a one-user license is $5,000. If you have a $25 dongle but no support contract, you're basically out of luck. Now, if you pay their support contract, that support contract is about $7,000 for those 10 licenses. So you have to have a current maintenance contract in order to get a little device replaced. Things like that are not reasonable.
Well, given that this is all occurring in the market, to what extent are we dealing with software for which there is essentially no competition? Is that a factor here? Because I would think that in a situation where the service contract costs more than the software, if there were alternative providers of comparable software, that prices may go down.
The problem with that is most of the software that we're talking about is higher-end software. We don't usually see 99-cent programs out there that use a dongle because the dongles themselves are expensive, roughly $25 to $40 a piece. So in order to make it worthwhile, the company has to sell software that's rather expensive. So that's one reason. Now, the program that's out there, usually these are pretty high-end software programs. And the amount of training that it would take in order to retrain your company, you would have to first purchase that another program if it was available. Whether it would be less or not, I don't know. The problem is that if I have a suit, how many suits are going to be in that same price category? There may be some that are more. Well, I'm sure from what I'm wearing, there's a lot more. But there may be more, there may be less. And does it do everything you need to do? Is your machinery tooled for that software program? And then what's the learning curve to go from that program to something else? And then how do you integrate that system and take your other stuff offline while you're implementing the new software?
Okay, so there essentially would be little competition for some of these products, and maybe not. It's just the fact that someone chose a particular piece of software that had maybe unreasonable terms in terms of replacement cost for dongles or service contracts. There aren't alternatives for if those users that...
There aren't very many alternatives, and any alternative out there would be priced along the similar lines since we're talking about similar industries. Let's say for ZMAX, for example, if we're talking optical design, we're talking about some very highly trained professionals. We're going to talking about software that does the same things that are going to be in that same price range as far as the software goes. We're not talking software that might be like Microsoft Word. That's a word processor that we can get open source word processors that are much less expensive. These are softwares that are very highly specialized.
So to what extent is this example that you gave in terms of that price relationship for the software and the service contract or the price that would be charged for a replacement dongle, is this the norm in many of the types of work that you've had experience with, or is this anecdotal?
Oh, no, this is quite normal for the industry, that a software companies will not provide support unless they have a maintenance contract, and that's very typical.
In the same vein, I guess, as with the question of time and the remedies that are made available for by a copyright owner, and that having some kind of relative relationship to the particular use of that software and the need for it, are we dealing with a similar kind of situation in terms of cost that we should be looking at this or considering this in terms of what the substitute would be for cost? If a copyright owner provided a replacement for some fee, I assume that you would accept there are some costs that are reasonable.
Certainly, if a copyright owner will replace the device for a customer without having to go through it and exorbitant cost, that's wonderful.
So how do we quantify what is exorbitant? Is this, again, just a reasonableness standard in terms of time and price?
Well, let's also remember that the copyright holder has also already been compensated for his product. And once they've been compensated for the product, we're not taking anything away from them. Now, General Motors, if I buy one of their cars, and hopefully they stay in business for a while, I buy one of the General Motors cars, and a device, something goes wrong with it. Well, I don't have to stay only with that vendor because the car's been paid for. Now, while I don't own software, I have paid the vendor for what they are asking for the software and the use of that product. So maybe if something does go wrong, it should be an open market system that I should be able to go ahead and get it replaced somewhere else if that's possible.
And how much would for someone who knows what the dongle is doing, I mean, assuming that you had to figure that out, there would be additional costs that would be involved. But how much is this hardware lock cost to produce? mean, if in generally, is this like a, for a USB key? It's just the cost of that piece of plastic and metal, and putting in the software or the software into that.
Well, there's the cost of the hardware piece itself, the dongle itself, which is rather minuscule, maybe $35 to $40 roughly. But then there's whether or not that company will actually do that. And obviously, they're not going to sell that replacement for $35 or $40. So the cost to an end user, if they have a problem, are first money and second downtime. And then third could be retraining employees if necessary, if they're having problems. Most companies, if you have a problem, will want you to send in, if they do a swap out, for example, and if you have a current maintenance contract, you've got to send in your device to them first. Then once they receive it, they'll send you out a replacement. So there's considerable time delays, and a lot of industries cannot simply afford to have those delays.
How long and how much, how long would it take and how much does it cost typically for someone to go to a third party to get a replacement?
Well, again, there are no real third parties. I mean, I do my service, but it also varies and depends on the kind of software that I'm working on.
And what's a typical turnaround time for your services?
It depends on the actual lock device that we're working with and the software program. Some things we've developed, which took quite a bit of expense and time, where we can actually turn that over within a day or two. And others can take up to a couple of weeks or so, or maybe a little bit longer, depending on the device and if it's something that we have readily pre-made. Nothing is off the shelf, but some of it doesn't take as much work as others do.
Steve, do you have any thoughts about in terms of any limitations on the any proposed exemption in terms of some of those the time and cost issues?
Well, I've two thoughts on this. One is the existing exemption says reasonably available in the marketplace, I think, is, and that would, I think, subsume issues of time and cost. And I'm not sure there's been any demonstration of problems with that, and it would probably be difficult to come up with a more precise definition.
I wouldn't object to that, Steve, either the way it is.
Okay. But the other, I think... Okay. Just to back up a second here, as I understand it, Mr. Montour is not in the business of selling replacement dongles. He's in the business of circumventing so that the dongle is unnecessary. Again, as I understand it, this is not the mass market. This is generally a high end market. So, and it's not the one I'm most familiar with. But software publishers use dongles for a reason, and the reason usually is to enforce limitations on the number of simultaneous users or the number of licenses, the number of seats that can use this software at once. So if they have there's examples in here where there are three dongles and they don't want to have engineers carry one around because then if they're not available, they can't use the dongle, you know, they can't use the program. But the idea that they've already been compensated is a little bit off because they've been compensated on the expectation that license limitations will be enforced. And the way they enforce them is through a dongle. This is my understanding. Now, that's why there's a big difference between a replacement dongle, which is kind of restoring the status quo continuing to enforce the limitation, and under this license that Mr. Montour correctly pointed out, usually these programs are licensed and not sold. There's a big difference between that and circumventing, which eliminates the dongle from the picture. I would think also eliminates the technological means of enforcing the license limitations. I would assume that if there's no dongle involved, then it's probably much easier for more people to use this software than is covered by the license. I think if that's the case, there's clearly that's the harm that's inflicted on the software publisher by circumvention. Now, as you've recognized a situation in which it's appropriate to inflict that harm, if you will, because the software publisher really won't support, they won't provide a replacement dongle, or they can't, they've disappeared. It's obsolete, it's obsolete in the sense that you've defined it. That's one thing, but I think it's quite different to say, well, they're too slow or they're too expensive or the switching costs from one program to another are too high, because I think Mr. Montour was not saying there's not competition. He was saying that there are high switching costs.